This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, live from New Orleans, we have Terry Varigan. He's the vice president of a company called CompuCure. And we brought him in because he works for a small, woman-owned company that's outside the Beltway and has been very successful dealing with federal contracts. And I thought he may be able to provide some lessons learned so federal IT professionals won't be wary of dealing with someone in San Francisco or Chicago or Boston or New Orleans, because they may have an ability to perceive things that other people can't. And it's, you prove by your works. And that very successful company won a lot of awards. And believe it or not, we're going to learn about New Orleans and the success of IT companies in New Orleans, of all people. But before we begin, Terry, tell us about your background, how you wound up working for CompuCure.
Well, to start off with, I began life as a public school teacher back when.
And half the audience just turned the radio off.
But very good at it. But after 3 years, I got tired of earning $7,000 a year. And a mentor said, you need to get into technology. And so I began teaching myself and then looking for companies that could teach me. But the bottom line on my working for CompuCure was a sort of an act of desperation after Hurricane Katrina wiped out the city. I had a business that I was running that the funders decided to go away. They got scared of New Orleans.
And you lived in one of those shacks, or what was it?
Well, a FEMA trailer, yeah, my house.
You lived in a FEMA trailer, guest, I tell you that much. Yeah. I'll admit to living in a trailer.
Yeah, the first time in my life, it was an experience not to be repeated, but I hopefully hope to God never for the city again. But I had a FEMA trailer for 19 months while I tried to rebuild my house. Wow. And it was an experience not, as I said, not to be repeated. The six leaders that came with me with that startup business had no damage to their homes. And so I parted ways in a very friendly way, generous way, from the owner of the funder for the business and worked as a lone wolf. My first contract was with the USDA National Finance Center, actually. I did some work to helping them to get back on their feet, although they weathered extremely well. It was a mutual friend that put me together with Angelina Parker, who's the owner of CompuCure, and she was in bad way after Katrina, like most of the city. Had three employees, including herself, and maybe $300,000 in revenue for that first year afterwards, and that's about the time that we got together. And
so this is the story of America, isn't it? I mean, you're knocked down in the ground, you kind of pull yourself up in a town like New Orleans, and you succeed. I mean, who wouldn't want to listen to the story? This is a great story. And dealing with some very, very big companies in town here that have got a lot of the procurements are locked in, and somehow from the swamps of Louisiana, the new swamp guy or something, from the swamps you pulled yourself up and you're successful. This is a great story. Let's call the Washington Post. Let's call CBS News. And it's a good story, isn't it?
Well, I having lived it, you don't realize what you're accomplishing while you're in the middle of it.
I know.
But after the fact, I look back and I go, wow, what a climb. What a climb. You know, we really hit the ground running about mid 2007. And by 2010, we had gone from $300,000 to $5 million in revenue, and from three employees plus me, four, to about 40. And it was insane. I at one time I had about seven projects that I was managing at one time. It was crazy.
So you go from the trailer into work and go back to the trailer and trying to worry about juggling insurance in your house and what if it happens again? Boy, that's an exciting story. Well, Here's a success. You can go to CompuCure.com and see the Inc. 5000 Awards. So
yes.
Is that five? What's that all about anyway?
Well, I was delighted when it happened. We received news about it. But Inc. magazine every year publishes their fastest growing businesses in America. And we were included in the list of the 5000 fastest growing businesses in Louisiana in the nation. And we were in the top 100 for the state of Louisiana as well. We grew 66% in the years of 2009, 10, and 11, and was just amazed that we had accomplished something like that. You know, you have certain numbers that you want to hit for the sake of the continuity and stability of the business, for the employees that you have.
Yeah.
You know, that really is the issue. It's part of the joy of this work. Is the output doing things? Technology is not just ones and zeros. It's the lives that are impacted by the technology. But the other part of it is the people that do the work, and you want to make sure that they're employed and that they're enjoying what they do. They have the tools that they need.
So Forbes wrote up the success. Will you mention the Forbes magazine article too?
Well, you've really done your research. I in March of this year, first week of March, the city of New Orleans hosted Entrepreneur Week. And the Forbes reporter was in town covering the events of that week, and she wanted to look for a success story, to put it frankly, a success story of a small business that actually succeeded, where these others are still in the process of trying to make the numbers.
Well, can you imagine being in this town, have your business flooded, and live in a trailer, and still persevere? I mean, it is a good story.
Well, thank you, and yes, it is. It kind of gives me chills when I think about it. But the fact was is that there were some people that at Entrepreneur Week, the people that put it together, when she was looking for a success story, they mentioned me, and she called up, had done her research, and wanted to know what was the secret to the success. And there's a lot of technical reasons, processes of acquisitions and the technology itself. But when it came down to it, it was the partnerships that we had. Having been around a long time, unlike a young kid like yourself,
here's a $20 bill, thank you.
we made sure that the people that we partnered with were always included in every project that we went after. If I had an opportunity to put 20 people on a job, I would deliberately go find small businesses in the area or in other states. In one case, we had a project for the National Finance Center that involved teams in Denver and St. Louis, and we had people out of D.C. In fact, we were moving the acquisitions, actually the whole program of the USDA that managed acquisitions from St. Louis to Denver. And it involved three teams.
So 20 terabytes. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a lot. And it was between disparate platforms. It was operating systems that were different. And complicating things was that the NITC didn't want to use the methodology that we had recommended that won the business. And so the project was extended like 3 weeks, burning time while they insisted on using tapes. In order to move in two separate projects, roughly 15 terabytes and 5 terabytes of data, and it kept failing and kept failing. But once we were allowed to go ahead with our methodology, the approach that we wanted to use, we came in $110,000 under budget. It was budgeted for $850,000. We still came in at around $740,000.
I think that's what our listeners want to know. So they see. A company that's gone through a disaster. And by the way, anyone listening, disasters can hit any time. Chicago, Boston.
Absolutely.
Here, Miami. And so how do you recover from that? And what's the best practice? So you walked up to them and said, well, this is nothing compared to Katrina. I mean, Katrina hit in 2005. You had this project in 2000, I think, 7 or 8. And did that just prepare you to handle the chaos of a data move like this?
Well, you know, actually, you've certainly hit on an important point. In trying to rebuild the business for Angelina Parker, the owner, and trying to drive the business, I went after projects that were sophisticated and complex and that would require more talent than what I could bring to bear from within our own ranks, thus the partnerships. and we took on things that were complex and challenging. At one point, we did a conversion of the email systems for the National Finance Center. It was at a time when I was managing seven other projects at the same time, but we had a closed window of 3 months. And could only work after hours and on weekends. And so I was putting in like 100 hours a week between all the projects. But you deliver on time. You make a commitment to customer satisfaction. And so and always monitor the budget as well as successfully completing the projects. But then you have to go after the tough ones. You can't rely just on yourself. It is our industry is based on trust. That's really what the contracting officers buy is trust, a demonstrated record.
Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about from hurricane to success, working with federal projects. I think we're going to take a look at a couple of case studies and maybe some lessons learned for our federal listeners and maybe our contractors to learn and try to find out exactly how to be successful with the federal IT projects. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Terry Varigan, Vice President of CompuCure. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have a person from New Orleans, a gentleman by the name of Terry Varigan. He's a Vice President of CompuCure. For more information, you go to CompuCure.com, download white papers, find out about the success they've had with a lot of different contracts. The reason we brought him in is because he's a small business, works out of town, has been very successful dealing federal projects. Now, why is that? Well, because he survived the hurricane? Well, maybe that's why, because they've got experience in partnering with other companies. Well, in the first block, we learned that may be the case. But now, Terry, I'm going to throw out something here, and then you can reflect and tell me how someone could do it. Many of my listeners are federal IT professionals. They show up for work at 9 o'clock in the morning. By noon, they want to jump out the basement window. All kinds of frustrations. Hands are tied. You know, budget getting pulled back, this and that. And so they're, you know, they get stuff thrown at them all the time. So if someone waltzes into my office and says, John, we got this major project going from A to B, and you got to get done 30 days. Bye. And that's what happens. They get stuff dumped on them, and they're looking around. And so should they go to one of the big players like Accenture or PricewaterhouseCoopers or Deloitte? Should they go with a small company? Small company, more flexible, not as knowledgeable? I mean, give us a – toss us a rope. Tell us, what would you do in a situation with a 30-day gun to your head? I mean, what do you do?
Well, in fact, I've been in those situations. We were talking about the IAS and FDW data migration for the National Finance Center, moving those the entire USDA's acquisitions database and tools from the NITC to the National Finance Center.
On an IBM system, right?
All of it IBM. Yeah, it ended up on a big P595, as I recall. It was complex. Well, one of the first things that we knew we had to do was design, assemble, and implement what we call the mobile SAN appliance, which, by the way, was not something you put on your wrist. It was 900 pounds of steel, every kind of device possible, because we didn't know what we were going to get into when we went to the NITC. That turned out to be a really knowledgeable bunch of people. They just didn't know us. But from the very start, what you have to do is quickly decide what talent do you have and where do you have talent that you can get to quickly. And unfortunately, while I have had excellent partners at IBM and Accenture, at Deloitte, they just can't move quickly. You know, and their prices, although they're reasonable for their expertise and the size of the overhead that's represented in those companies, I didn't want to have to pay for that overhead, and I didn't feel that my customer, the National Finance Center, should either.
It's like, I have a Honda. Do I have to take it to the Honda dealer? Maybe a local mechanic will stay late or work on weekends and get the job done quicker.
That's
what I look at small businesses.
That small business is not cheap. It's not going there to get fire sale prices. If you've got good talent, you're going to pay for it. But instead of $295 an hour, it might be $165, $175 for that kind of talent. But what I did immediately with that was to look through my Rolodex in the old days, but I still went through my directory and called a couple of people that I trusted highly. I knew how many people it was going to take. And one of the keys of my success has been partnering with businesses and being loyal to those that were loyal to us. And so I went to other small businesses, and within the space of a week, I had a team assembled that had experience that could rival any big firm, focused on discovery, detailed plan development. I mean, those are the nuts and bolts of doing any sort of project. And while we were doing that, though, gathering the basic information, we started buying the parts and components and assembling the mobile sand appliance. As I said, that's it's a 900-pound piece of steel. And at the same time, once the team was assembled and we had the first phase of IAS, the Integrated Acquisition Systems, mapped out, we started on another segment, was to start identifying what we needed to do with the federal data warehouse. But but in every case, my guys were working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when we actually got to the physical moves, we were working 24 hours a day. And one of the keys to being successful in and turning in clean results is that the project leader has to work the same hours. When I had guys that had, after having worked for 24 hours, 48 hours to download information to that MSA, and then were driving physically in a secure truck, I stayed in touch with them via social media, email, calls.
So the first lesson learned is make sure you have a team you can trust, just like the old TV show. Who do you trust? That's number one.
That's exactly right. And that's why I continue in any project, I continue to look for new partners that I might be able to bring in to learn how they work and whether or not they are trustworthy. Because you can never count on everybody being available when you need them. So I always look at every project as a path towards developing new relationships, new trusted relationships.
So from the perspective of a federal IT professional, someone could walk into his or her office next week and say, well, guess what, Sally? We got to move all that HA stuff from Baltimore over to Chicago, and you got a month to do it. And so I think what people have to do is they have to develop a relationship with vendors and find out the strengths and weaknesses of all the vendors. And it's not necessarily bad to evaluate a small business and say, well, maybe the small business has got the chops to accomplish this, and USDA took a chance, and they came in under budget.
Well, it was phenomenal. The results that we achieved was better than I had expected, but it met everyone's expectations and exceeded it. And the federal government is making it easier for small businesses through contract vehicles. I mean, one of the things that I focused on about 4 years ago was to start looking for contract vehicles that would give my government contracting officers and the executives, the branch chiefs, the ability to move quickly on things. One of the most startling developments in my mind was the GSA's 8A STARS 2 GWAC, government-wide acquisition contract. It was a 3.5-year evaluation period the GSA conducted. They went through a fine-tooth comb with our background, our experience in interviewing people, calling up individuals, asking for surveys, vetting us financially. And we were one of about 500, a little over 500 firms that were selected nationwide. But the real power of this GWAC is that it borrowed from the SBA's 8A program. You had to be 8A certified at the time to qualify for it. But the 8A program had a $350,000 cap on sole source awards. In this case, GSA set it at $4 million. So that a contracting officer, a federal executive, can go to more than 500 firms that have been tested, examined.
On the approved list, yeah.
They are approved, and if it's under $4 million, as long as it's, it doesn't matter whether it's 1 month or 5 years, you can simply sign over the contract to the GSA's program, and it can go for $4 million without having to be a competitive bid.
So the first lesson is, who do you trust? Second lesson is, take advantage of federal agencies like GSA who maybe can filter through and give you some suggested resources.
Absolutely. You've got to do the homework. And it ends up being a benefit for large firms that want to move quickly. They have existing contracts that are in place. I've been contacted. I haven't accepted any yet, but a large contract that's in place that has an add-on that comes on, and there's a time crunch that they face. Well, they can go to the GSA's STARS 2 list, and have 500 firms to pick from. It doesn't have to be CompuCure. Of course, I'd like it to be that, but the fact is that it's a great tool, and other tools are coming along all the time.
Well, that's where due diligence comes in. They get a hold of you, and they find if it's a good fit. If it's a good fit, fine. If it's not a good fit, well, then it's just not going to work.
No, it doesn't.
Tell me about Seaport E. Is that a similar type program?
Well, in a sense, it is. Seaport is an entirely competitive environment. Seaport E has over 1,000 various vendors that do business with the Navy, but they do allow for a certain amount of certifications for set-aside business, like 8A. And we were recently, because we're woman-owned and there's a new directive from the administration, thank goodness, to encourage woman-owned technology firms, among other woman-owned businesses, they allowed us to add to our qualifications, disadvantaged business enterprise, woman-owned. But they do have an 8A program within Seaport E. It's very competitive. It's amazing what the Navy is able to accomplish. When everybody else was cutting back, I saw the Navy increase the number of invites that went out.
We have to take a quick break. And just let you know, federal IT professionals could care less if it's female-owned. They just want to know if you can do the job. I mean, this
right.
is, you know, you can be owned by a million women. Who cares if you can do the job? You know, that's what's the most, because their promotion, their responsibility lies on the project being successfully completed. And New Orleans, who cares? Can you do the job? Okay, here's your background. And I think that's the lesson I've learned after many, many interviews with federal IT professionals. Let's take a break here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's guest is Terry Varigan for a company called CompuCure. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Terry Varigan. He's a vice president of CompuCure. You can go to CompuCure.com. Look at all their fancy awards, download some white papers, and see how they've handled enterprise-level systems transitions very well and effectively. And they've competed with some very big companies like IBM. They've competed with companies in town here, and they've been successful at it. And that's what we're trying to figure out is okay, so a little company kind of, you know, beat up and knocked down after Katrina, kind of pull themselves up and has success in a very competitive environment. We're trying to find out what lessons learned should be. And there's a question that I want to just toss out to you here. You know, there's all kinds of lessons here with big transitions and working with IBM. So you walk into a big IBM facility and you say, hi, we're the guys from New Orleans. What do you think of so far? I mean, this is a difficult position to be in, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. I think it depends upon your attitude more than anything. Even though we're a small business, I see us as a peer. I've been called, or CompuCure has been called, a boutique facility because we're able to do so much. But I understand from having worked for large corporations that underneath it all, aside from the huge infrastructures, the ability to deliver successfully projects for your customers is dependent upon individuals. And I've delivered those all my life. I've delivered those kinds of projects. And I work hard to attract smart people around me, people that are smarter than me. So when I receive an assignment, for example, to manage IBM maintenance services for the National Finance Center's data centers and the main one in Denver, the primary, and then the backup computing facility in St. Louis. Initially, IBM was taken aback. It was gut-wrenching work, in a manner of speaking, to bring them to the table. And it took determined contracting officers at the USDA to say, this is the way it's going to be. You haven't managed maintenance services successfully.
Tough love, buddy.
It was, and that's what it took. And I told them from the outset that my job as the manager of maintenance services with IBM is to make you look good and to make customer satisfaction a priority, because if that happens, then I'm going to look good. I never go into something, CompuCure never goes into something looking at it as a show for CompuCure. The bottom line is customer satisfaction and to make all of our team members look good. And at the time, it came out of the chaos of Katrina, that the National Finance Center was buying replacement equipment, building a backup facility, building remote office locations for COOP sites. And IBM was delivering tons of hardware everywhere. And as a result, the inventories were in chaos. And machines were being paid for on a monthly basis that weren't in existence anymore. Or machines were identified as being in one location when in fact
they're
in another.
So it's the fact that you survived the hurricane, lived in the trailer. Hey, if I could live in a trailer and pivot and move and no car. But you really have to walk in. And, you know, Frank Cooper wrote a book once called The Customer Signs Your Paycheck. Well, you know, that's what's going on here is that IBM, BMI, ABC, who cares if you have the talent and can do the job? Well, then, especially in a chaotic situation, and maybe the lesson is that people who survived the chaos maybe have the flexible skill set to survive in other regional chaotic situations.
Well, and then unfortunately, that's happened frequently in our nation recently. But yeah, you one of the joys of technology is looking at the chaos and bringing the parts together to make it work, to make it successful. I mean, the other part of it is seeing the results actually being generating the paychecks or putting out the information that's needed for healthcare. But the fact is you take that chaos, even if there's some general parameters, and you pull it together and make it whole, make it a stream that works. And in the case of, and you have to think out of the box. You've got to be willing to look at new solutions.
Go to school and take a course in chaos management. Maybe FEMA's going to teach it, but that's tough.
I can't take the credit for this particular out of the box vision. But Michael Allen, who's branch chief at the National Finance Center in New Orleans, said that we're paying for a backup computing facility. Why do we have it running 24 hours a day when we only use it twice a year for emergencies? Well, of course, common sense was you got to keep your machines running, especially your mainframes. And there are other reasons for it as well. But we took the lead when we took over the management of these services and then really, in effect, challenged the IBM engineers. What happens if you shut down? Is there a gradual shutdown? Is there gradual power up? What is the effect? And we learned that we were able to save half of their annual cost in maintenance services, savings in power, savings in cooling, and got better results overall. But you don't shut down a data center.
A positive story coming out of New Orleans. You know, many of my listeners will find this interview on social media. You can read my blog. I'm at Tech Tuesday Blog. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ray Gilray. And I don't know if you folks are involved in social media at all, but some of our listeners just like to follow. And what I'll be blogging about this interview, and you can go to my blog and read about it and click on it, listen to it, and go to their site and get more information. It's just I think a lot of folks that are under a certain age prefer to get information in this fashion rather than in a newspaper or maybe with a newsreader on television. It's kind of a different way to find out about this great story. I mean, someone goes through tough times. What do you learn? Well, you learn to survive, maybe to operate in hectic situations. But let me tell you something. I've been through cutovers on Sunday nights with big systems, it better work. 8 o'clock in the morning, it's not working. They are screaming. I remember taking a notebook and just writing down complaints all morning long, and calling people. Here's suicide hotline. Call the number. I mean, it's terrible those Sunday nights, aren't they?
Oh God, yes. I've been through many of those myself. Always ended up successful, but in the meantime, what pain?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. I'll throw you a kind of curveball here. When you look at the federal government, thousands and thousands of people are waltzing in offices with tablets and smartphones, and we all know that. You know, I mean, there are some studies. In fact, I was at YouTube this morning, and I listened to a Cisco report. They talked about 25 billion devices will be connected to the internet in 2015. And you read these studies and you go, whoa, I mean, this is a chaotic situation.
Right.
And Terry Chaotic Berrigan, well, Terry Chaotic, I mean, this is chaos. I mean, how do you manage this thing? I mean, what approach would you give to my listeners who are, you know, all frustrated and going, oh, this Gilroy guy, he waltzes in with a Galaxy 1 week, and next week waltzes with an iPhone, he wants them both on my system within 30 minutes. I mean, this is chaos, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I like to think of myself as breaking through the chaos, Berrigan.
Captain Chaos, that's what you are, buddy.
Well, I'm going to tell you that I've been, throughout this period, we've been at such a run. We formed a study group within CompuCure to figure out just where social media plays. I'm on Twitter, but I use it more as a personal political blog. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and because I'm really trying to learn those media. And I can absolutely see, I mean, Twitter was originally, as I recall, was created as a part of a project management tool that expanded so rapidly that it lost that definition. But I see this as a way of communicating, especially with future generations, because newspapers, please God, don't let the newspapers go away. It's a part of the republic, an important part of it. But there's no stopping the flood of technology. And so I'm really just trying to learn it now, and how to use it. The fact is that the environments that we work in the federal space are all secure and don't allow social media. Too easy to attach malware to a Twitter message, you know, those kinds of issues. You know that from your own background. And so we've started using it as a possible recruiting tool to get the message of CompuCure out.
You know, I sit in a classroom every Monday night, 20 students. I say, raise your hand if you watch television. No one does.
No.
Raise your hand if you read newspaper. No one does. And so how can you even communicate information about crisis management unless you use social media somehow? And the questions, I think, and maybe the lesson learned is here, well, don't jump in. Maybe let's take a look, see what's going on. Is it 10 feet water, 2 feet of water? What's the temperature? And I think that's probably more appropriate, especially if you're dealing with sensitive financial information. But it's a challenge for everyone.
Well, it is, and you can't ignore it. It's not going to go away. It's going to increase, as you've already observed, and as other studies have demonstrated, it will become the basis for communications long decades in the future. Who knows how it's going to evolve? So you can't ignore it. That's the key. You have to begin working with it in small doses on a personal level for the executives that are running the businesses, engaging the staff that are, let's say, a little younger than I am, because you've got to learn the device. You've got to learn the technology, the methods of communication. And I found it to be very stimulating on a personal level. But how to put it into a secure environment and where is it appropriate? I've been asked about that myself, actually, and my response, the lesson learned that you've already defined, is that you've got to test the water. I have someone at the office that keeps insisting on putting a Twitter feed on our website. I've held off so far.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Terry's technology choices and find out if he's Captain Chaos or Captain Nerd. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, you have Terry Verrigan, Vice President of CompuCure. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been in the studio here with a gentleman by the name of Terry Verrigan. He's Vice President of CompuCure. He's got a kind of a fun story to tell from a Washington, D.C. perspective. No, he's not inside the Beltway. No, he's not some big fancy pants company like IBM or Pricewaterhouse or Deloitte. Small company in New Orleans survived Katrina and kind of looked at some federal projects, and maybe from the lessons he's learned in surviving the hard times, he's helped federal agencies make these big moves. Organizations like USDA have rewarded him with further contracts. You can go to their website, CompuCure.com, and download a white paper and find out exactly what they did. And that's what we're trying to find out. So what is the magic sauce to that gumbo? What is the magic sauce to being successful in a chaotic environment? I don't know what the magic sauce is. Terry, toss us a bone. Tell some of our listeners, is it just being patient? Is it being flexible? Developing long-term relationships and then pulling the correct person when you need one? I mean, what's the magic?
The first thing is don't panic. Don't get afraid.
Don't flip out.
You know, you have to understand that these moments in life are going to come. They're a standard, natural part of life. And so your response needs to be, I'll sort through this. I'll see the sunrise tomorrow. The problems will still be here, but I need to start looking at the overall whole of the chaos of the situation and begin taking small steps each day. It's like breathing slowly, and you don't panic, you don't get afraid, and you start then passing that sense of peace along to the people that work with you to achieve the success. You recognize their successes and you praise them for it. You recognize what they're doing, and you do that for your customer's sake, for the end result. But the main thing is you don't panic. You don't allow fear to take over. You know it's dark tonight, and there were nights in that FEMA trailer when it was absolutely silent and absolutely black. You couldn't even hear insects because there weren't any. There weren't any birds in the air. But you don't panic, and you take one step at a time. And that translates into all sorts of situations in the real-world environment of technology. When things don't go right, or the client doesn't really understand what they're asking, and you help them to redefine.
Well, earlier in the interview, you talked about a client that they asked you, how should we make this transition? You supplied a plan. They hired you, and they said, oh, by the way, you have to do it our way. And you complied with that until they decided that they had a change, huh?
Well, that's basically it. I mean, the customer is the customer. And while they may not always be right, you have to treat them with the respect that they're due, because the bottom line is they're paying you. And even though it took 3 weeks and multiple tries using the old tape methodology, we burned the hours. We were still working 18 hours a day on various aspects that we knew we could deal with while we were still trying to make the tape methodology work. The end result was that they were finally, because we showed them respect, we understood why they were reluctant to let us do a direct attachment of our mobile SAN appliance into their secure network. We gave them full access to everything that was on the drives. But the bottom line is that when they finally allowed us to do that, we had the first downloads within 48 hours driving it to Denver. But it was out of respect. We knew what was driving them. And we didn't get angry. We didn't point fingers. We didn't blame, because they were some extremely talented people dedicated there at the NITC. I enjoyed working with them. But for their own reasons, they just didn't know us. We were sent there by the National Finance Center to do the job, which is also another extremely fine organization.
I know. I work with Govies. You know, I live next door, and serious, hardworking people. And absolutely, that's what I try to bring people like you and say, look, learn something from this guy. Maybe he can toss you a bone. Maybe you can use this 2 years from now when some confusing thing happens, and go back to the interview, go to their website, find out how they did it. And I think being flexible, having thorough understanding of capabilities of individuals and developing trust is 1, 2, 3 on the list. You talked about tape technology. There's some listeners who don't know what tape backup is. There's some people who don't remember what a Bernoulli box is, but I certainly remember a Bernoulli box, and in the day that was a pretty important piece of backup service. So what we're going to do in this part of the show is we're going to give you a scientific 10-question test and find out if you are, in fact, a card-carrying nerd or just like a nerd wannabe. So,
okay.
Here we go, Terry. So when did you buy your first personal computer?
Oh, Lord, it was a green screen IBM, and the latest innovation was a floppy drive, a single floppy drive. Wow. I was about 30. My early 30s.
Okay. And what year did you buy your first cell phone?
I describe it as a brick with an antenna.
Sounds like mid-80s, huh?
Yes. Yeah. And it weighed, I don't know, it felt like it weighed 3 pounds. And any time I was on a long conversation, I get a pain in the neck, literally.
For the youngsters listening, it used to be just in cars. You'd have this whole trunk filled with a phone,
right,
and then
right.
You'd carry on this brick. So it's kind of funny. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Oh, yes. Yes,
okay.
I do.
Well, we don't have to reveal it. Just want to know. Do you have a personal blog?
No.
Okay. Do you use any personal online backup services?
Oh, yes. I sure do. Actually, I have two. One is through Norton One, online backup. And then I use an Apple Time Capsule.
Okay.
Time Capsule.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone 5.
Okay. And in a given month period, 30 days, how many apps do you use on that, you'd say?
Oh, geez. Well, I have about 80 apps on the phone, and I would say in a month, I'm probably using half of them. 35.
Ooh, that's points. That's nerd points, buddy. Good, good, good. And if I'd waltz into your house tonight, not the trailer, but your house, how many tablet devices would I find?
Two.
Two.
Two
okay.
Tablet drive. Both of them are iPad 2s. I'm thinking about the next iPad, but these are damn good devices, you know.
Watch that language, mister.
Oh, excuse me.
Now, what social networking sites do you participate in?
LinkedIn and Facebook.
Okay.
Those are the only two, but I like the results.
And here's going to be the important question, number 10. Last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Oh, actually it was both, but...
Oh, come on now. Just be honest here. Just fess up here. If it's paper, say paper.
Elmore Leonard's classic Mr. Majestic was in paper. You got to read Elmore Leonard in paper.
Well, I'm going to take this home to my basement.
Well, wait. Plutocrats. I also read at the same time was reading Plutocrats electronic.
No.
Oh, man.
This is a form, and I'm going to submit it to my DEC PDP-11 in the basement. We're going to get a green bar printer, and I'm going to put it in the U.S. mail to New Orleans with a zip code. And I will find exactly where you rank on the nerd scale. This is a nerdology type scale, and we'll find out. But has some strength. Your apps were strong. There's some weaknesses there, but we'll just have to see. Terry, this studio used to be a hockey studio, and they'd have this eight ball, they'd predict hockey scores. And I used to hand it to my guests, and I don't know, someone threw it at someone or they broke or something. So I'm going to hand you a figurative eight ball. And maybe for the benefit of some of our younger listeners or some of our frustrated listeners in the world of IT, is maybe you can tell them where you see this whole business heading in the next 5 to 8 years, what skill set they can bring with them in order to be successful, and maybe talk about this adapt and flexible and agile approach you bring to this world.
Well, I think that's the most important key. One of the dangers of being so focused on our personal devices is that we forget, and I've seen this happen time after time, we forget how to interact face-to-face, personally, on human levels, although Facebook and Twitter is increasingly so popular and such use that you feel like you're in a very intimate community. But there's no question that the whole world is moving to the cloud. In fact, the cloud's been in existence for probably a decade or more. It's just we didn't know to call it that. Big data has been in existence, but the need to be able to pull information out of big data and through the cloud didn't have the algorithms. We didn't have the technology to make use of it. But the key is to certainly be familiar with the devices and the technology as they emerge. But don't lose track of your coworkers and your fellow students wherever you may be in whatever environment. Make time for personal interaction, because when it comes down to it, the delivery of any project, the delivery of any form of technology, any service, whether you're generating 750,000 paychecks every other week. Or you're analyzing common strains related to the development of a certain disease from big data feeds. It all comes down to people interacting with people, and it's too easy to get behind the devices and forget about the actual service.
Putting a face on technology, and I guess on a face on interacting with other federal IT professionals, and the importance of face-to-face communications. We have to end the interview here. We're running out of time, Terry. You've been listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's guest is Terry Verrigan, Vice President of CompuCure, up from New Orleans and actually up from a trailer and back to success. Thanks, Terry.
And thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.